Blog Talk Radio.
Is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Thank you, folks. Welcome. For those who do not know and those who do know, Terry's husband passed away last night. I know he was suffering from COPD. And the pneumonia he contracted, he just couldn't fight it, and he succumbed to it. I want to say that, forgive me, here we go, but I am a girl, so I don't have to apologize like Beck does. Anyway, hi, Robert. Thank you for joining us, but I wanted to get into...
I'm sorry about Terry's husband.
I know, sweetheart. Anyway, what I'd like to say is this family here is absolutely, without a doubt, a true family. I met David and Terry in person in D.C. just shy of 3 years ago when Glenn Beck did his Restoring Honor in Washington, and it was like close to 900,000 people. Of course, the media said there was a couple hundred thousand. You know how they are. But and our first day, of course, we had the great dinner and everything, and so... And then the day we went to the thing was a Saturday, and somehow everybody's getting into vans, and they're going on the trains, and they're getting to the subways, and I got paired off with David and Terry and spent the whole day with them, sitting on the grass, schlepping, walking, smoking cigarettes, you know, laughing and carrying on. And I got to tell you something. David was one of the sweetest, kindest persons I have ever met in my life. This man was like... He was treating myself and Terry, of course, his love, like he was a mother bear with two cubs, man. He was protecting us. Thank you, everyone, for signing in. Bill, Ron, Master Guns, Rod, FT, Yola. Anyway, so I think I can dry my tears now, but this is how I remember David, and it's just amazing. Terry, of course, is our wonderful educator, teacher, Patriot Education. Her show won't be going tomorrow. I went ahead and canceled that at her request. You know, we are a family. I feel like I've known you guys forever. I mean, it doesn't matter how much distance we, you know, all these things. And I just wanted to make sure that we had that that prayer and worship session to honor her. And hopefully I can get the address to send her a really good sympathy card and everything. And she knows how we feel. My God, I think we've all poured our hearts out through Facebook to her today in any other ways that we could. So I want to kind of go into something that is very pertinent to this subject about heaven. And I just pray that both she and David know the Lord the way many of us do, and that they do have a place in one of those mansions. This comes from, and it's weird because I was going to do this regardless of this sad news, talking about faith and heaven and what happens when we die. And this is from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book, and this is a letter he wrote when he was spending a year in Barcelona to his future brother-in-law, Walter Dress. So I'm going to quote from it about these items about this young child who was only 10 years old. So here we go. From Dietrich: today I encountered a completely unique case in my pastoral counseling, which I'd like to recount to you briefly, and which, despite its simplicity, really made me think. At 11 a.m., there was a knock at my door, and a 10-year-old boy came into my room with something I had requested from his parents. I noticed that something was amiss with the boy, who is usually cheerfulness personified. And soon it came out. He broke down in tears, completely beside himself, and I could hear only the words, "Herr Wolf is tot," meaning Mr. Wolf is dead. And then he cried and cried, and I asked, "But who is Herr Wolf?" As it turns out, he is a young German shepherd dog that was sick for 8 days and had just died about half an hour ago. So the boy, inconsolable, sat down on my knee and could hardly regain his composure. He told me how the dog died and how everything is lost now. He played only with the dog. Each morning the dog came to the boy's bed and awakened him. And now the dog was dead. What could I say to this child? So he talked to me about it for a while. Then suddenly his wrenching crying became very quiet, and he said, "But I know, he's not dead at all." And I asked, "What do you mean?" "His spirit is now in heaven, where he is happy." Once in class, a boy asked the religion teacher what heaven was like, and she said she had not been there yet, but tell me now, will I see Herr Wolf again? He's certainly in heaven. So there I stood, and I was supposed to answer him yes or no. If I said no, we don't know, that would have meant no. So I quickly made up my mind and said to him, "Look, God created human beings and also animals, and I am sure he, the Lord, also loves animals. And I believe that God, with God, it is such that all who loved each other here on earth, genuinely loved each other, will remain together with God. For to love God, for to love is a part of God. Just how that happens, though, we admittedly don't know. You should have seen the happy face on this boy. He had completely stopped crying. So then, I'll see Herr Wolf again when I am dead, then we can play together again. In a word, he was ecstatic. I repeated to him a couple of times that we don't really know how this happens. He, however, knew, in italics, and knew it quite definitely in thought. After a few minutes, he said, the child said, today I really scolded Adam and Eve. If they had not eaten the apple, Herr Wolf would have not died. The whole affair was so important to the young boy, as things are for one of us who, when something really bad happens. But I'm almost surprised, moved by the naivete of, piety that awakens in such a moment in an otherwise completely wild young boy who is thinking of nothing. And there I stood, I who was supposed to know the answer, feeling quite small next to him, and I cannot forget the confident expression he had on his face when he left. And I just, it was an interesting thing, and I know Ron can relate to it because he talks about not dying because of the original sin. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Hey, darling. I wasn't trying to cut in on your reading there. The player kept cutting out, so I had to call so I could listen.
Okay. Yeah, it was quite an amazing, piece to this book that I'm just like barely into the middle of, not even the middle of it. And with everything that's happened today and, last week, because I know Terry didn't do her show and she was probably at his bedside. I don't know because I don't have all the details. But, I wanted to open with Amazing Grace and the Psalm 23, which was quite fitting, and telling the story of how I met both of them in D.C. because it was so poignant. And all of our hearts go out to her because she's a love. She's an absolute love.
Yeah, my heart really goes out to her. I know how much David means to her.
Man, yes, and, absolutely. Thank God she's a strong woman, man. Thank God. And I told Yola as we were in the chat earlier, just before we went live, that I said a silent prayer and asked the Lord to send the comforter to Terry and explain how much all of us here at Patriot Families love her and want the best for her. I mean, I did everything I could, just please, Lord, comfort that woman because she's just, oh, man, she's a friend. She's our family member, let's face it. And Robert, I didn't know if you knew about it before you came on the air because
I sure did, and I'm really, my heart goes out to her.
Yeah, anyone on Facebook can contact her who's, can find her on Friends or whatever the deal is, but that's why I had to email you, Ron, because I knew you didn't do the Facebook thing, and you're very wise, which I'll get into, because I had a whole lot of stuff planned. I still have 45 minutes. I wanted to get into some things that have been bothering me. Glenn talked about this earlier today on his show, and I immediately sent two emails to ISA, and if you guys want to, I think I put it out in a blast to as many as I could. If you go to your House of Representatives and tell them to vote yes on HCON Res 23 in case whatever happens with this small arms treaty thing, this could protect us against, this usurper in the White House with his executive orders and gun grabbing. So I did that because I'm very concerned about what's going on. And I mean, my God, the Pope, the world, this idiot's speaking in front of this radical left youth group in Israel. Oh, of course he won't speak to the Knesset. Oh, no. I mean, look, this scares the bejesus out of me, so that I'm doing everything I can. I sent two emails to ISA today, and, I hope you guys do that. But who knows when they're going to vote on this.
Linda, I have a question for you.
Yes.
If the vice president is in Rome, Pope, hobnobbing with the Pope, and if John Kerry, the president, are in Israel, does that mean campaigners?
Well, I don't. No, they're as long as they're still breathing, unfortunately, they're still in charge. Mm-hmm. Except, let's face it, my lord, the real king in charge. Mm-hmm. Thank heaven. Anyway, there was a whole bunch of stuff on the gun grabbing stuff, and I wanted to do, if I have time, I do have time, and you guys can cut me off and chime in. But this was, I think I sent out, it was an email I got, and I can't remember where it came. Oh, it was one of my buddies here in Oceanside. This woman, this child's 14-year-old daughter, wrote this letter, and she actually read her message to Congress, and so here's the story. My 14-year-old daughter, Daphne, and I went to a gun rally at the, this is in New Hampshire, of all places, Capitol in Concord on Saturday. That was January 19th, so this is going back a couple months, 2013. I don't even own a gun, but I'm a firm and strong believer in the Constitution and the wisdom of our founders, especially when it comes to government taking away our freedoms. And I don't like the direction Obama is taking the country on that issue. You know, America, land of the free, and all the core strengths that made America great. I made up a bunch of signs, and Daphne prepared a letter before the rally, thinking she might hand it out to anyone who was interested. While attending the rally, Daphne noticed that the speaker had stopped talking and that he was handing the bullhorn to anyone who wanted to speak. She pointed that out to me, and soon she went over to the Capitol steps, got in line, and waited for her turn. After fighting her way to the front of the line, and she stood there on the steps of the New Hampshire State Capitol and read a shorter version of the letter below. She brought the house down. After the cheers had died down, dozens of people shook her hand and congratulated her. A couple of reporters interviewed her briefly, and other photographers took her picture. Photographers. Just before she left, a representative from the New Hampshire Assembly talked to her and asked if she would come and speak at a hearing on gun control on Tuesday, which was following a few days later, January 22nd. Daphne said, sure. This kid's 14. On Tuesday, we picked her up from school, 12 noon, and drove to Concord. We found our way to the Legislative Assembly Hall. The room was packed, and there was a line down the hall around two corners. Soon they moved the meeting to another room. The second room proved too small. Finally, they sent us across the street up to the large chamber in the Capitol building. The room was near capacity, about 95% of people were pro-Second Amendment rights. The representatives and PACs got to speak first, then the common folk. Daphne was the first in the first 10 to speak who were not representing a group. She was poised, though a little nervous, and spoke clearly to the crowd. When she was done, she brought a copy of this her speech to the front of the chamber where the representatives were sitting. And they fought over who would get to take it from her. The moderator had previously silenced the hall from cheering and clapping, but the people told her they would have cheered if they could, and they shook her hand on the way out. That must be the assembly. The whole proceeding took more than 3 hours. So here's the letter, because this is really cool. Dear citizens of New Hampshire, 4 days ago I was across the street for a gun rally on the stage or the steps of the Capitol. I had never been to a gun rally before. I expected it to be all about hunters and guns. I was surprised. People were not afraid of not being able to hunt. They were afraid of criminals. They were not afraid of criminals at all. Do you know who they were afraid of? The federal government. I was shocked. They were afraid of the government taking away their freedoms. The reason I went to the rally in the first place was that I had heard children like me talking with the President Obama about guns on the radio. I think those kids were far too young to make policy and got it all wrong. Naturally, I don't want my mom or dad to die either, nor my friends or family, but I learned in school that the First Amendment gives us our basic freedoms, like freedom of speech, religion, freedom to assemble, to protect our God-given rights. Our founders gave us the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. My civics teacher, this is a good one, taught us that the reason our founding fathers gave us the right to bear arms is to protect ourselves from the government of man, because when man is given absolute power, he becomes absolutely corrupt. In 1776, guns freed us from the abuses of King George. Today, guns keep us free from tyranny by government. If President Obama wants to take our guns, isn't he taking away our means to protect our right to freedom? Wasn't the Second Amendment given to us to protect our First Amendment rights? It's not by choice that those the first two amendments, they were the two most important gifts our founders gave the American people. Again, I don't know. I'm just a 14-year-old girl, and that is why I thought, that's what I thought I learned in school. Did Mr. Obama learn something different in school from that? Yeah, Frank Marshall Davis could give us an ear on that one. I think it is terrible for someone to use a national tragedy for political gain, don't you? So when I heard Mr. Obama issued 23 gun control orders in the wake of the Newtown tragedy, I was upset. In school, I was taught executive means to execute laws, not to make them. When did that change? Didn't the president swear an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution? Doesn't the Second Amendment state the right for the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? Tell me how 23 orders on gun control is not an infringement. I'm going to get it to that definition in a minute. Please tell me that. Has King George returned? I would say so. I hope that New Hampshire members of Congress remember their pledge and do not use this tragedy to create unjust laws. So I ask myself, what gun would our founders want their citizen militia to have today to protect us from a government greedy for power? I think Thomas Jefferson would recommend a semi-automatic rifle with 50-round magazine clips and pistols that hold 20, but I'm sure George Washington actually would demand these arms. Just so you know, I don't even own a gun, nor does my mom or dad, but when I'm old enough, I want the right to buy a gun if I want to, so I can protect the America that I love. I hope I never need one, but I always say, plan for the worst and hope for the best. Unfortunately, that's sort of why the government is taking away our guns. They are planning the worst for Americans. Oh, yeah. And not thinking of the best. Maybe the question we should be asking is, what caused the morality of the United States to decay? Are parents no longer teaching their kids, thou shalt not kill? Of course, it's translated to murder. I want to live in an America with laws that protect the best people on earth, not the worst. Don't you? Wouldn't that be more free? Wouldn't that be more American? Isn't freedom what America is about? The right to bear arms is our best guarantee to live free. Finally, at my track meet at UNH, her high school, on Sunday, I read the banner on the wall. It said three words: tradition, pride, and excellence. I hope and pray that New Hampshire will continue its tradition of excellence and lead the way for the rest of the country and never infringe on my rights. May the people of the great state of New Hampshire carry on their long tradition of freedom so we can proclaim with pride the words our forefathers gave us: live free or die. This is our United States. This is our New Hampshire, and that should never change. Live free or die, New Hampshire. Thank you, Daphne Jordan, Nottingham, New Hampshire. 14 years old. I was still climbing trees at 14. Okay. I looked up the word infringed, and it says in the dictionary, to encroach upon in a way that violates law or the rights of another. So, that you have, ladies and gentlemen. Any comments, Robert or Bob?
Great speech.
She needs to run for president.
Oh, my
Absolutely.
Lord.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I was so excited. I have a small clip here. I've got a whole bunch of news on Cyprus and other things, too, but I want to do a clip. This was actually, and I may have sent it around in fall, Black Panther.
You're breaking up real bad, hon.
Okay. Try not to. Better. Sometimes prognosis. Okay. The conservative, black conservative leaders discuss how the NRA was created to protect freed slaves. So it's only 3 minutes. You guys got to hear this. This is great.
I want to thank the Lord for our Constitution. I also want to thank the NRA for its legacy. The National Rifle Association was founded by religious leaders who wanted to protect free slaves from the Ku Klux Klan. They would raise money, buy arms, show the free slaves how to use those arms, and protect their families. God bless you. Many of us probably wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the NRA.
Let me just briefly say that gun control, for black Americans, we know that gun control has ultimately been about people control. It sprouts from racist soil, be it after the or during the infamous Dred Scott case, where black man's humanity was not recognized. And the beauty about some races is that sometimes they're blatantly honest. And the racist Chief Justice Taney said, "We cannot allow the law to recognize the humanity of this individual because he would be able to keep and bear arms." What a lot of Democratic-controlled segregationist governments after the Civil War attempted to deny black men and women their freedom. They instituted black codes, largely to deny the Second Amendment from newly freed slaves.
Right after the Emancipation Proclamation, what was going on down in the southern states, it's very clear that the Dixiecrats wanted to disarm black people to keep us from defending ourselves against the Klansmen who were murdering white and black Republicans to control the ballot box. So I think history is ripe with examples of there's a correlation, direct correlation, between gun control and black people control.
This current administration is far from the truth. This agenda is becoming more and more obvious to all that it's a distraction. It's a reason, it's an excuse to carry out an ideology that is more evident every day and every week that goes by, that it is anti-American. And when you touch the Second Amendment, you can't become more anti-American, because America would not be without her guns, and guns would not be necessary without her God. We call upon Americans, both black, white, Hispanics, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and even those who are not of our faith, to agree upon this. Without God, without guns, and without the Constitution, America's end will come with haste. For when they change our Constitution, they will take our guns. And when they take our guns, they will also seek to take our God. That's when Americans will fight back.
And that's the end of the tape. So what are your thoughts, Ron and Robert?
I apologize, because I'm totally absorbed in another story that I literally almost vomited when I heard this tonight on the radio.
Which one? Go ahead.
The guy's name is Gosnell.
Okay.
Anyone heard Dr. Gosnell's trial going up in Pennsylvania?
Haven't heard this one. Enlighten me.
I'll enlighten you, but I'm going to tell you right now, this is going to make you weep.
Oh, God.
He ran an abortion clinic.
Oh, I think I saw parts of... Oh, God.
Viable. They were delivering babies and murdering
them. I know.
Them.
Oh, God. I think I saw it on Facebook. I've got to go back and read the... maybe it was on Political Outcast. It was horrible. And it was just before I went on the air, so I didn't get a chance to... Oh, my God. I know.
He's not an abortionist. He's a murdering beast.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you've got... You put the link up for us?
I did. And, I mean, the fact that, you know, the New York Times in their story...
Good Lord.
...says
Good
Lord. That the case is punctilious enough to refer to Gosnell's victims as viable fetuses.
Oh, my God.
Because the story said that, you know, typically abortions are performed in utero. So they're not discounting that what he was doing was an abortion, even though the children, the babies, were born, breathing, living.
Yeah.
Beings. We're talking about morality and just, wow.
Yeah. Guess who else is for partial birth abortions? Always has been.
Of course.
Zero.
Barry Socorro.
Yeah, Barry V. I call him Vissarionovich. As
my good buddy Mike Church calls him, calls the whole lot of them Mordor on the Potomac.
Oh, man. You know, in fact, this goes back a few weeks when I went to the Day of Resistance and the pro-gun rally, and my friend Barbara Decker, she turned me on to Agenda 21, and she helped form this group, which was called Americans Protecting Property Rights, and all of us go to city council meetings all the time. We scream, yell, what, you know, we do it all, trying to get rid of Agenda 21. And she and I had a conversation because we were just hanging out, you know, in the sunshine, and we're wearing shorts and drinking ice water, you know. And she says, we are so screwed. And I says, tell me about it. And I said, which buildings, if you had the capability to demolish, would you go after first? And she said, the UN. And I said, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, do you know what they're doing right now? This is why I talked about this on the top of the show or after we did my tribute, and we're talking about gun rights, the HCON Res 23, they're doing this small arms treaty thing right now. We're done. If they take them, we're done. They get the Second Amendment, it's over, dude. I will have to go so far underground and have a conversation with my sister. You better move Mom into your house because I'm out of here. I'm going with Bill. I can't deal with it. I can't. These people are crazy. And that's why I sent two emails to ISA, got a letter from him today or yesterday in the mail, and there are times when his office actually calls me when I'm ticked off because they want to calm me down. So I can get to him, and I will. If I have to camp out on his doorstep down in Vista, believe me, I will. This is crazy. You know, and the HCON Res 23 will protect us if Barry decides to go behind Congress and just, you know, ratify this stupid small arms treaty all on his own, take our guns away. That's his mission because he's been told to. Oh, what say you?
Oh, well, I think, you know, we've talked about this for how long since we got on online and had radio shows. I mean, there's an agenda. And agenda remains unchanged regardless of who is at the helm.
I know.
Mordor. Yeah. On the Potomac. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's the God's truth. And how many decades and almost, over a century now they've been doing this. Because,
two centuries. I mean, let's be honest about it, shall we?
Well, because, and I don't think that people like James Madison or Thomas Jefferson were the evil ones. I think maybe there was some question with George and his little deal with, you know, trying to screw the 10th Amendment back in the day before the ink was dry on it. But I think the real evil ones, who are the communists and the progressives and the Fabian socialists, have all joined forces because they didn't like that little monkey wrench that they threw into the deal called freedom. And they've been trying to tear it down ever since. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the Illuminati, and we have been since day one. It goes back probably beyond Babylon, and you and I know it. But, you know, what's it going to take, Ron? I mean, what's it going to take?
Look, there's no hope. I mean, I don't believe that there's the only hope. I mean, and I don't mean there's no hope in this life. There is hope. The only hope is God and embracing the sacrifice of Christ. But aside from that, to change human nature, there's
no hope in that. No, I understand that, but you know, that's why Christ came. He wanted to try to change people's hearts, for God's sake.
He was changing
their hearts.
I'm telling you, the more I've read through the scripture, and just, I mean, when you go through and you read it, and
I know.
I think that, you know, for most of us, I know for myself at least, I grew up with a continuing understanding of the Bible and Scripture and what
okay.
it all meant, right? And my understanding was what I was taught. No different than my understanding of what government was and what our history was.
Right.
Right? And
okay.
just as I see that all that I was taught about government was not what it appeared, so too, I think we've missed the boat in the Scripture, because I think we have missed the bigger picture of the story. And I think the example that's given, if we honestly study it earnestly for answers, we ask for answers and guidance, and not take the pastor's
sure.
interpretation of it.
Right.
But read it for our own, for ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Because...
Yeah, one of the things that jumps out at me is, okay, you know, I never had considered prior to, you know, a year or two ago that the Bible itself, purely and wholly, was a book about Jews, a Jewish book, a Hebrew book. And I don't mean that to be, you know, anti-Semitic or anything else, but the fact remains, it was the Hebrews, the Israelites, the Jews, whatever label you want to put on this. It was a group of people that had the wherewithal to enter into a contract with God.
Yes.
And to think that he's not going to hold them to the terms of the contract, well, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, okay. So what I'm looking at with the new Pope and with the founders' visualization of individualism, individual responsibility, individual freedom, individual choice, individual, you know, moxie, whatever you want to call it. Christ is the same way. You cannot partake of that enlightenment and coming to him without an individual choice. There's nobody, there's no collectivism here. That's why when you look at history and you see that word used, who the heck was starting that stuff? The Bolsheviks. Hey, well, it goes way back to Plato.
Well, sure.
Sure.
Well,
but
of course.
You can't, I mean, and that was, what, 380 BC. So, in fact, I'm going to incorporate, I've still got to work on my speech for the city council. They are going to wish they had never seen me because, oh, this girl's going to just enlighten them even more.
I think it was 350 BC. But
okay.
And
well,
I'm not trying to be the wise guy here or whatever, be corrective,
okay.
But I get what you're saying, and I'm glad you brought up the Pope, because I wanted to mention this before I forget.
Okay.
If those that were listening on Monday night.
Yes.
Okay. I had not made the connection on Monday night when I was talking about what's going on when I played those two clips, and in particular the last clip.
Okay.
Where they talked about how the wealthier countries or nations in the world are going to have to step up to the plate and provide more assistance to the third world countries that we've industrialized through the UNIDO program, right?
Let's
back up. Oh, yeah. Let's back up a minute and recognize this for what it is, okay? This is the central banking system telling you, all of these new bubbles that we've inflated in these third world countries, the wealthier countries are going to have to step up and pay even more. So all those cheap goods that you were getting that was staving off the inflationary pressure of rising prices, you're going to pay for that. But nonetheless, right on cue, we have a new pope. And what is the label that's being placed on this new pope? What is his modus operandi? What is it that we keep hearing about this pope is different because he's the people's pope? He's for the who? Who is he out there?
The poor.
Oh, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Isn't
yeah.
that perfect timing?
Well, you know,
that we have this new pope arrive on the scene as the spokesperson for the poor and the wretched around the world, as the World Bank and these others are going, you know, we're going to have to step up to the plate and pony up for these poor people. And now we have a pope.
I know.
Okay. The sales guy for the whole thing.
Yeah, there was on my stupid paper today. My stupid paper today has the Pope, and it talks about the poorest and the weakest, the rising of hope. Let us be protectors. Well, anyway, Glenn did a whole thing on his show. I don't care. I don't know. All I know is I love Jesus. I'm written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Praise the Lord. And the rest of them, you know, they're his enemies. I'm not dealing with them. I have prayed every night for 5 years. Take them off my shoulders, Lord. You're going to like this one, Ron, because I was going through the – I wanted to get to this today, and I think I can go through the other one because I will run out of time on the UN Agenda 21 stuff right here in River City, my hometown. But this is cool. It says, Cyprus rejects taxing bank deposits. This is right up your alley. The levy was to secure international bailout. Okay. This is Cyprus. Lawmakers in Cyprus decisively rejected a plan on Tuesday to seize up 10% of people's bank deposits in order to secure an international bailout and prevent a collapse of the country's banks. It goes hugely in-depth in the third page, but I won't bore you all with it. But the boat leaves the tiny Mediterranean economy in financial limbo, but hundreds of protesters outside Parliament cheered and sang the national anthem when they heard the bill failed. So they rejected it. How long till we here have to try to bail them? I mean, they're going to start stealing stuff from us. I mean, what's your take on this?
Well, my take is that I hope they're going to be in the same boat as, what was it, Iceland?
Oh, God, yes.
That told the bankers, you know what, it's your debt, you created it. You
yeah, and they arrested
go
them.
Go pound sand, yeah, and that's what needs to happen.
Yes, agreed. Absolutely.
That is what needs to happen, and we need to stop coddling
I know
the very people that are creating this false dichotomy, this false
oh my gosh,
it's such BS. And you know, my store manager yesterday him and I were talking, and I said, you know, there is so much that you don't comprehend.
Yes.
You don't get it. And there's so much that I haven't even talked about because I managed to put it off in my own mind that, well,
sure,
that's just nonsense. But it's not nonsense, because I'm here to tell you that in practical application, in the way things really are, there is more truth to what's been called for decades patriot mythology.
Uh-huh.
Okay? There's more truth in that than anyone is willing to admit.
Okay.
And when you start to, and it is a very, 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 very tangled web. If you ever get a chance, and I'll challenge everybody to do this, I want you all to do something for me.
Okay.
Whatever money you have in your pocket, dollars, tens, twenties, fives, whatever.
Okay.
Take them out of your pocket. And the best case scenario is that you'll have several different denominations from several different years of production when the notes were printed. And I don't want you to look at the Treasury Secretary, because that's pointless. I want you to look at the Treasurer. Does anybody in the room right now know who the Treasurer of the United States is?
No.
Everybody, we all know who Geithner is, the Treasury Secretary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, schmuck. Yeah.
Well, who's the Treasurer? Because that's the boss, isn't it? And what you're going to notice when you start looking at your dollar bills, if you just take them out of your pocket right now and look at a few of them, you probably can't really read the signature on very many of them, but I can tell you what you're going to notice. You're going to notice, you'll be able to read enough to gather that the person is Dominican.
Oh, my God.
What?
They're from
that.
The Dominican. They're Latino.
Oh
my God.
To be more precise, they're from Puerto Rico.
Holy
You can't
Christ.
Make this stuff up.
I'm
telling you, back in 05, it was Presario, okay? Now, there's a reason for that, and if you want to know the reason, then you can go look up and do a Google search on the U.S. Trust number 62.
Okay.
All right, what you have to understand is the monetary system, when we talk about the Federal Reserve Bank and all of
right.
that, it operates as what's called a Systeque Trust. This goes into birth certificates. I know it sounds crazy, okay? And I have pondered it for quite a few years, and I think that it would be more ridiculous to believe that it's not true than it would be ridiculous to believe that it is true. And that is that when a child is born, a baby is born,
mm-hmm.
birth certificate is created.
Oh, my God.
They trade the birth certificates, just like stock certificates.
Oh, my God.
That is collateral for a bankrupt government to continue to operate in bankruptcy.
Yep.
And the overseers, the people that are in charge of the whole thing, is the central bank.
God. The worst evil ones of the planet. They're the ones who are controlling all this crap.
Yes, Congress simply acts as the board, okay?
The bank is the
fiduciary.
These sons of bees. Oh.
Okay, so the treasurer in 2006 is Anna Escobar Calabro, or something of that nature.
All these treasurers were located in the Dominican Republic. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. This goes back to the 1930s, and then specifically 1953.
Yikes. We're so screwed.
Okay, you've got to go back now and see, this is part of our history in this country that we don't really pay a lot of attention to. Okay? Go and look at our acquisition, if you will, of the Philippines.
Yikes.
Guam, mm-hmm. Puerto Rico.
Yep.
The Marianas Islands. Go and look. And when you see that, when you go and research, you know, okay, the Philippines and U.S. involvement in the Philippines and Panama, for that matter. But all these little island nations, all right? What I want you to do, once you have that history down pat, then I want you to pull back, and I want you to go in and look at the monetary, look at it from a monetary standpoint, what was going on in the money system at that time. And you'll get a better picture of why things are the way they are.
They are.
And
yeah,
I have a question, though, Ron. Is that the reason why the senator that got busted for prostitute in the Dominican Republic went to Dominica because to visit the treasury instead of the prostitutes?
Well, I don't know, but I can tell you this, that our treasury department is run out of Puerto Rico.
Oh, my God.
So, too, is another agency that doesn't show up, and that would be the Internal Revenue Service.
So the moral of the story is the Spanish are taking over.
No. You misunderstand.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Puerto Rico is not a state.
Not yet.
Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. They won't be. Trust me. They won't
Thank
be.
Thank God.
You know, it's just like the Virgin Islands. Okay. There's a loophole in the tax law for the Virgin Islands. If I live in the Virgin Islands for 6 months and a day out of the year, I can have a business in the United States that makes $1 million a day profit, and I pay no taxes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Jeez.
Because it's U.S.
Oh, yeah.
This is such a tangled web, I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
To try and even begin to comprehend it. 1953 was the year. Which is the same year we went into Korea, but that's a whole other, I don't digress into that. 1953 is the year that the Secretary of the Treasury issued a directive or a Treasury order, and I forget the exact number, 130598, I believe it is, but I could be incorrect because I don't have it at my fingertips. But the Treasury Secretary issued a directive, which basically what's happened is he created a new agency called the Internal Revenue Service.
Yep. Wow.
And that was bureaucratic. That Congress didn't sign off on it. The president didn't sign off on it. And that came out of the Bureau of Internal Revenue, which was in and of itself never actually created by Congress. And that goes all the way back to 1872 when the first income tax law was repealed in 1872.
Oh, geez.
And it was instituted during the Civil War. I mean, you have to have a single-minded drive and all the time in the world to dedicate to going to try to weed out this web. It's disgusting.
I know. It's crazy. Well, you know, like we talked about on your show the other day, because of everything that was going on in Cyprus and what they were planning to do and what they might be doing here, and you don't own anything, including your children or your car, and we've talked about driver's licenses and all that crap, and, you know, if you really owned your car, you would have a bill of sale. You wouldn't have some stupid title of certificate.
Right.
Yeah.
And how does the state get involved in that whole mess?
Oh, yeah.
They're third party to a contract. I mean, if we're talking about selling a piece of property,
this
right?
This is statism. This is
I mean, statism. Honestly, Linda, if I decide to start my own automobile company and I build a car and it's Golden Motors and I sell that car to you, how does the state get involved in issuing you a certificate of title?
It's ridiculous. I don't know.
And here again, in contract law, you have to understand what a certificate means. Certificate of title. And what does that mean? That means color of title.
Wow.
What does color mean? Color means the appearance of. The appearance of title. It's not really a title. It's just the appearance of title.
God.
I mean, it just goes on and on.
Insanity.
Here's the thing, and I don't know, when you get involved in, like, debate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you're going to debate someone, you've heard of the straw man argument.
Yeah.
Okay. A straw man argument or a straw man is when you create something to further your point, and many times out of context. Well, what they've done essentially through the birth certificate, this is the gist of the theory. What they've done through the birth certificate is they've created a straw man, an alter ego of you. And alter ego of you is a debtor.
Yeah.
It's a debtor,
yep.
Okay? And this debtor, this straw man, it looks like you, it sounds like you, it's pronounced just like your name, it's spelled the same way, but just like the capitalization of citizen in the Constitution to the 14th Amendment, the name is in all capital letters.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that is significant. It stands out. It is what they call conspicuous. So this straw man is responsible. If you have a checkbook, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a checkbook, pull your checkbook out, and the line where you sign your name, it looks like a line, but it's not a line. It says something. It has words. Didn't know that. You got to get a magnifying glass.
Oh, yeah.
What it says is authorized signature over
I've
and over again. Okay? Or it may say authorized agent. Well, an agent is someone that's acting on the behalf of someone else.
Oh, my God.
So you're acting on behalf of the straw man. Who's the straw man? The straw man is the debtor. They're the ones made liable. Who's the beneficiary? Well, the beneficiary is Congress. Who's the fiduciary? The fiduciary is the bank. It gets very complicated. I don't fully understand it all, but
it's
I understand enough to know that it is nefarious and
it's crap.
Bullcrap.
It's crap. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we talk about the stock market. Okay, go. You know, regardless of what the intent was of Seed and Company. Seed and Company is a subsidiary of the Federal Reserve Bank. Seed and Company, on paper, owns 98% of all the stock trades in the stock market.
I know.
People who are trading stocks, stockbrokers, and others, the only thing they technically own is the right to the proceeds of the transaction and not the stock itself, because all the stock certificates are in the name of Seed and Company. That ought to damn tell
you
something.
I know.
They own it all.
I know.
You own nothing. All we're doing is trading back and forth within a closed system.
It's nuts. Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you really, truly, like back in the old days, if you bought a car from somebody, you had a bill of sale, just like you had with anything else, whether it was a horse or a cart or, you know, a farm. My God, I mean, what are we doing here? Nobody gets it.
Here's the beauty of it. Here's the beauty of it, Linda. All of it. It's all on paper.
I know.
Okay? A straw man is no different than a corporation, and a corporation is no different than a government.
Yeah.
You know why? Because a corporation and a government and a straw man all have one defining characteristic. They're a construct of the mind. They do not exist in reality. I'm dead serious.
God. Yeah,
no,
and
but
you know,
I mean,
what?
You think about it. Think about that for a moment. Because we believe it is so, it is so.
Exactly.
That's the rub. Only
it's
because we believe it and we participate, we go along.
Yep.
This is why I've been telling everyone.
I know.
Stop consenting. Everything you do every single day gives credibility to the mirage, to the lie.
I know. The illusion. And you know what? I agree with you. We have to start walking the walk huge right now.
Come out of the friggin' cave and see the light.
And
see reality.
Yeah. And we got to actually walk the walk of people who really, truly want to be free, Ron. And that's what I think.
That is the fact. That is an absolute fact. Look, you know, it's like the old saying, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those that believe they are free.
I know, honey.
Because I believe we have freedom and all this, and it's such a big facade. It is the biggest mind meld on the face of the planet. It's insanity.
Yeah, we've been so blanketly, hugely, it's like there's this big, huge cloth over the earth. That's keeping us from God. You know,
we've been mind hosed, okay?
Oh, honey, yeah. Oh, beyond. They're. I mean, now they got the chemtrails to finish us off. I mean, look. I get it, and I'm going to play some stuff. I wanted to say thank you guys so much for joining me tonight. I was so pleased that you kids came in tonight because I wanted to give my love to Terry and David, and, you know, and to the Lord, and to all you guys.
Can we go into the archives, honey?
Yeah, if you want to. Absolutely.
I wouldn't mind because I know Robert's got a point that he's chawing at.
The moral of the story is do not write a personal check to anybody anymore.
I know.
But now, Robert, I'm going to tell you something. My stepfather had a saying that I hated when I was growing up. But the more I look at things, the more I know he's right. Never hold on. Let me give you his saying. Never write a check with your mouth that your ass
can't
cash.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. He's right about that. Because you know why? I wrote a check on March 1st, right? And it has not cleared yet. They're just holding this check, and it's just making me go crazy. I mean, they should have already cashed it. It's been 3 weeks.
If you guys want to stay on and let me play this little ditty, and then we'll talk in archives for a second. It's like,
sure.
Okay, it's really pretty. It's Jim Grease on Our America, and we'll hang on if I'll get it to work. Never works for me. Okay, it's supposed to work.
America. She was given life by a group of immigrants, much like you and me. They were beckoned by a statue with her hand held high, named Liberty. They had visions. They had dreams. They saw a new land of opportunity. They were moms and dads and family. They embraced individual responsibility. Together, they build a nation on a commitment to equality. They were a friend, a neighbor. They believed in accountability. And when danger came, they locked arms and stood for a nation's sovereignty. One day, their country called, and they united and went off to a faraway beach called Normandy. Together, they gave blood and treasure, and together, they saved a world from tyranny. From north to south, east to west, from sea to shining sea, from them we've inherited America, Purple Mountain Majesty. 200+ years in the making, that's America, our family tree. That's our heritage, that's our roots. That's what's kept us free. Now we're faced with another danger, this time from within. That is an out-of-control political society that's no longer accountable to their constituency. They've plotted, they've schemed, and they took advantage of an unfair tax called Social Security. And they've used deceit and deception, and they pander to a generation on the 18th tee. One of their own has said, "We stole the money." They've stolen $2.6 trillion from Social Security and are leaving a new debt for posterity. America, you're not a right possessed by a privileged class. America is a privileged right possessed by every class. So wake up, America. This isn't about sports, talk shows, or Saturday night TV. It's about our backbones, our guts, and bravery. America, you'll never reach your destiny without taking back the halls of Congress in D.C. We once was and still can be the home of the brave and the land of the free. But America, once again, your people must rise up, so God will continue to shed His grace on thee.
That was really cool. It's like a couple seconds left. What do you think of that one?
Hi,
Bill.
It.
Thanks.
I liked it.
Hey, Bill.
How you doing, Ron? How you doing, Robert?
Hey, Bill Strong. Sorry about Terry's husband.
I know.
You know, he was the first man in the Patriot family I met.
Really?
I met him in D.C. Terry and I and Yo have been together for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And it's really, you know, how I found him was he wore the same kind of hat that I do, and I don't wear ball caps.
Wow.
Well, you know, I was talking to my wife just a little bit ago, and I have such a profound respect for everyone on the Patriot family, but I felt a special connection with Terry. She reminds me so much of my mother, but she's so much more outspoken than my mother ever dared to be. My mother is not afraid to tell you exactly what she thinks of you. But Terry is so eloquent and rational in her thinking.
Just like my dad was.
She's very special. Amazing. And when we were in D.C. and I was sitting at the bar at the hotel, and David just kind of gravitated over him, we struck up a conversation, and I was very taken. And I don't mean this, you know, I was telling my manager this afternoon, and I don't mean this to be a, it's not out of hubris. It's very rare that I get the occasion to carry on a conversation with someone at a level that really intrigues me. And David was able to do that in spades. And it was never a debate when I was talking with David, even though we didn't necessarily agree, wasn't a debate.
Yeah.
Or perhaps I should say it was a debate. But it was a mutually respectful debate in which we debated the issues on their merits, and it was never personal.
Yeah.
And that really kind of endeared him to my heart, only having met him just 5 minutes ago, and I feel like we've been best friends for quite some time.
Exactly.
I'm blessed to have a picture of the four of us, me, my wife, Terry, and David, from our first trip to D.C. And I'm just going to say he was a deep thinker.
Yes.
And he looked at everything from every side.
Well, I think that, you know, we all should. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I guess for lack of a better phrase, it's a philosophical way of looking at everything. But what else is there?
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, the part of the problem is so often we jump on a bandwagon.
Yeah.
And we will stake our claim. And we can be absolutely as wrong as wrong can be. And we will not even consider another outside way of looking at our stance because, by God, this is what I believe.
Right. That's not always the way to go. And I will say one thing that I noticed. That guy had a heart the size of Texas. I mean...
Oh, certainly.
The relationship between him and Terry was magical.
Oh, my God.
It was like...
It was inspiring.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was like a big... Yeah, he was like a big brother to me in D.C. It was like, oh, my God. It was like that no one could do me any harm because that guy was going to just, you know, kill him. It was like Mother Bear. It was unbelievable. He was just so protective and so wonderful and just amazing. Yeah, it was that whole experience, that whole 3.5 days was like phenomenal.
Yeah. I wish it would have been longer. And I hope that you know, the atmosphere, like when we went to Delaney, it's a different, that's a different atmosphere than when we were in D.C.
True.
Completely different. But, and Bill, I can't say enough about you and your family.
Oh.
And the gracious embracement. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Jolene and the kids, they were just, everyone was absolutely fabulous, remarkably fabulous.
I know.
It was, even though we were at a campground, I felt as if you guys had just opened your home to everyone. And it was right. Everyone belonged. There was no, you know, there was no status. There was no anything other than we were just family. And I think that's what makes Patriot families such
amazing.
A special place. Yeah.
We were so glad to have you here. And you were amazing, and you left an impression here amongst people. There's others now that want to come and meet you and stuff, and it's just amazing. But to me, it's the fact that we can come from so many different backgrounds, and we can sit down and relate because
fellowship.
We believe so much of the same things.
We have, Bill. We've got this hugely connection to the founding. We've got this. It's like we're tethered to them. You can't break that chain. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
no.
And we all get it, you know. And I'm praying that Ron and his family comes because, you know.
I'm hoping everybody shows up, and I got a bunch of other friends from around the area that want to show up.
Right.
We'll get together on a Saturday night, and we'll let some guys play music, and we'll just relax and whatever. Some of these people are drinkers.
I have to. Well, you know, I can be too, and I not saying that to be proud of it, but Robert, you have got to come.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, Robert.
I've taken this summer off, guys.
If you want me to, I'll get you somebody walk around with you just to keep everybody up.
No, Leonie wants to meet you guys, and I think we might have to bring. Wait, the problem is we might have to bring Kathy, and that's going to be a bear if we do that.
There is plenty of access there for someone in a wheelchair. There's no reason in the world why my wife didn't make me dinner.
Oh my Lord!
She just walked down here with a couple of waffles, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" No, I'm giving her a hard time. There's no reason. There's no reason at all, Robert. And I guarantee you that there is more than enough people there that are willing to pitch in and help. Kathy is amazing.
Kathy's amazing, man.
Kathy made more of an impression on me than I think, you know, Robert or Leonie or even Frank when I was down there. And I don't mean that to be a wise guy. I'm very, very serious. There's...
She's playing.
I don't know. It's difficult to explain.
She's my hero, Ron.
There's a connection there. Wow. That, that I felt a connection with her, and not that I wasn't, you know, like doting over Kathy or anything like that, but having been in a family where I had an aunt that was mentally retarded because of a fever when she was young,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't something that I was unaccustomed to, being around someone that has a handicap, whatever it might be. But I've come to realize over the years, you know, we look at people a lot of times. Kathy is very handicapped, as was my aunt. And we had a girl at our church when I was going to church down here who was also handicapped. And, you know, people tend to look on those people with pity. I look on them with envy.
Ron, I got to tell a story. I had a friend named Bailey Smith who was in a wheelchair. He was paralyzed, quadriplegic. I mean, he really couldn't do anything, really. And he had a motorized wheelchair. And I don't know what, one night he got mad and he wanted me to hit him. And I would not hit him. And he kept running back and forth across my toes. And he was crying because he said I didn't respect him as a man.
You should have just hit him, Bill.
Well, in the end, Ron, I did. With tears flying down my face, I was crying. I hit him. I didn't hit him hard. I hit him hard enough. I didn't hit him hard. But because he was right. I wasn't respecting him as a man.
You were taking pity on him.
Yeah.
You were looking at him with pity.
And I learned a valuable lesson right then.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Lord.
Guys, thank you so much for tonight.
You see, the way I look at it, and I just want to throw that out there for a minute.
Okay.
We go through life fully functional. And so we look at others that are deaf or blind or crippled, you know, can't walk or mentally retarded, and immediately we have pity. It's almost a natural response. We feel sorry for them. But I'm telling you, we're the ones we should be feeling sorry for.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Because
most
of those people go through life. You know, my aunt, her whole life, she was 6 years old. I can't imagine anything more of a blessing than that. Are you kidding me? I mean, the innocence of a six-year-old
for 58
years.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? There was no reason to have pity on her. She should have had pity on me.
Yeah, because we got to deal with Barry V.
She had no responsibility. Her every need was cared for, and she was loved beyond measure.
Yeah.
And she never knew hate.
Yeah, no.
You know, she was so innocent.
Wow. Yeah, the naivete of babes, yeah, it's amazing. They're just so pure at heart, some of them. They're just so amazing, especially the handicapped.
I think that's the thing that really strikes me, Linda, and you hit it on the head, the purity. The purity of heart. They are unblemished. They're uncorrupted.
I think people who actually try to know more about Jesus and try to love the Lord more every day, they absolutely get it. You know, it's almost instinctive to us to help them, but to just like go, hey, this person's got value. This person's like really cool. Let's do something, not only never to take pity on them, but to at least show them, hey, I'm a human being and we know you are too. And we just are, you know, let's see who can help each other. I mean,
you know, we
can sit down and break bread together. Nobody should be fighting that's breaking bread together.
Good God. You know, we get so caught up.
I know.
In the race, in the rat race, and it is a rat race.
Yeah.
You know, I came home tonight. I got off work early. Traffic was horrible. And I got home at 6 o'clock. And I walk in, and my stepmother is in Colorado right now, and my dad's home by himself. And I came in and went upstairs, and, you know, Pops is like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "Oh," he said, "you're home early." I said, "Yeah, I got to go to the bathroom." He said, "Well, when you're done, I need you." I was like, "Great." Somebody always needs me. Isn't that the case? I mean, you know, tomorrow's my day off, and I want to start enjoying it now, but no, I can't. So I went to the bathroom, and I came out, and I was like, "Okay, what do you need?" And I'm thinking, he has this addiction to fresh spinach. It's unnatural, but I understand. And my wife had bought it. My wife had that same problem. My wife had bought him some planters. We're going to put some planters out so that we can have fresh spinach all season long. So I'm in the bathroom, and I'm thinking to myself, why do I get the feeling that his need is going to involve these spinach planters? And so I come out, and he's in his bedroom, and I said, "All right, I'm all yours. What do you need?" And he says, "Well, you know, I was trying to trim my toenails." And I'm thinking, okay. And I was having trouble. He said, "I cut the crap out of my damn toe, and I can't get the friggin' Band-Aid on it."
Oh.
And I'm like, "You're kidding me. You can't put a Band-Aid. All right, just pull your sock off. Let's take a look." And, you know, I had to catch myself because I was I was almost put off, you know.
You're being really selfish.
Really? I got to doctor your daggum foot, but it's my dad.
Yeah.
You know, and I owe him a lot.
Sure.
I owe him and God my existence. So,
yeah, you do. So, yeah, we have
bandaged
to.
Bandaged up his little pinky toe, and he was tickled to death.
It's a much better feeling to be needed than not be needed.
Yeah, and then I was like, that's it. I don't have to, like, erect 15 things in the backyard with screws and take 5 days to do. Well, hell, I can do that. A Band-Aid on your toe, I'm good to go, man.
And you know, if you really love your papa, and I think you do, you would have done a lot more than that if it was needed. Oh. And that's serving God, and you know it.
Well, so.
Sometimes you have to humble yourself.
I know.
You're right.
And it's hard. As a man, it's a hard thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, and especially when, you know, as a man, you're right, Bill. As a man, it's difficult to recognize that my dad needs my help.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, that's my tough. Mom's 90. I know that deal. I'm there. I'm right in it, but I love it. I want to take care of her. Anything she needs, man, I'm here.
Ron does need to come this year. I'm going to get the wife to take her pontoon boat down there.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking. Man, I know there's some fish in that lake we can catch.
Mm-hmm. And we saw the Amish catch fish.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
absolutely.
Sure. Now I have to look up on the GeorgiaCarry.org and make sure Indiana is one of the compact states with Georgia, because I can bring a whole mess. Is there a outdoor range around there somewhere where we can go shoot pistols there, Bill?
Well, I don't know if you ever hear on the radio here, Rob, but usually when I'm on, there's some guy down around the corner here shooting. But, yeah, Indiana doesn't have ranges like everywhere else. We go out our back door and we shoot.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, no, that's fine. But what I'm saying is, you know, dude, I can bring a freaking arsenal and we can have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, we got to do that. I got to practice. Oh.
You know, cans of hairspray, beer cans, beer bottles, whatever.
Squirt
I'm
gun.
Sure we can. I'm sure I can get you to. We can go right up here at Chad's house and shoot all you want to shoot.
I love it.
Now,
his neighbor's probably going to come over there when you do that and bring his little roll-around gun.
Well, now the question is, what kind of range can we get without, you know, putting anyone in jeopardy?
What kind of range can he get?
Length.
Distance. 1,500 yards, 2,000 yards, what, I mean, you know.
Well, he's saying you can go anywhere from 100 yards to, like, a couple, 2,000 or 3,000 yards.
Oh, wow.
Well, then I can bring all my toys.
I can take you up to a guy named David Crockett. And David loves to shoot.
So there's about probability that one of us
he and I served in the military together. And
no, Robert.
He's a long-distance shooter.
Robert, these guys are marksmen, believe me.
But I'm a good mark, believe me.
Well,
Robert,
just stand behind
the line.
We bring
our kids up around here, Robert. At young ages, we've got boys out here and girls out here deer hunting. We've got them squirrel hunting, rabbit hunting. It's
Absolutely.
Just our way of life here, Robert.
This is really, God,
my
13-year-old son killed his first buck this year.
My only concern, Bill, would be hauling the, not hauling. I don't have any concern hauling them. My concern would be where I store my firearms while I was there. Not that anyone's going to break into the car and steal them, but...
I have people around me close who have lock safes.
Cool.
I have a cousin. I know he has over 100 guns.
Oh my God.
locked up and safe.
I don't have any. I lost them all in a boating accident on Lake Alatoona. But you know, should I plan to buy a few more on my way up there? You know,
well, it'd be like, yard sale time here, Ron. You can pick them up at a yard sale.
Well, now I would love that. We could go yard sailing. My wife could get me to do that if that were the case.
Oh, it's a big thing here. You don't know what you can buy.
Oh my God!
I bet I've got 50 guns during my life at a yard sale.
I'm having so much fun here. Oh my God, you guys! All right. You guys, I'm going to take off, and I love
what you're
doing here.
And every night, I hear all the cops down over here on their range just going to town. I walked over there to the hill, and I sat down on top of that hill and watched them, and I thought, I wonder what they'd do if I winged one, and I shot down one of their targets from up here. And I'm back about 150 yards from them.
This is
great. I got to say, from the hunters I know and watching the policemen shoot, I bet on the hunters.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, sure. Most of the cops...
Oh, they're cheap.
God,
they're not going to waste a lot of ammo.
they don't... oh, my goodness. See, I have a Colt. I have a Colt right now. I'm on my Outdoors Trader. I have a Colt XSE 1911 that I've got up for sale for $950, and someone just sent me a message and said, I'm interested. What's your schedule tomorrow? Well, I'm off tomorrow.
Go for it, baby. Oh, my
there
God.
There you go.
Now, see, I do have a guy that I really like I recently purchased a Colt King Cobra from, who deals in revolvers. That's his shtick. That's his end of the spectrum. I'm more into the 1911s and high-powered rifles, so I don't know a lot about revolvers, but I'm learning. So I bought this King Cobra from him, and then I called him. Another guy was offering me a 44 Magnum, two different ones in trade for my Colt. So I called him and I said, hey, you're the revolver guy. What do you think? And so we talked a little bit and hung up. He called me back about an hour later. He says, I got a great little Ruger SP-101 stainless 357 Magnum snub nose.
Oh my
gosh. It's like brand new. And I'm wanting a 1911. So, maybe we could work out a deal. He gave me $400 and his gun for mine. I'm like, I'm definitely interested in that. It's a cute little gun. It's only a five-shot revolver instead of a six, but anyway.
I'll get you up here. I got to take you over to my friend. He's got a pumpkin launcher. We're talking 2.5-3 miles.
Bill,
air.
I love that
with
kind
air.
Of stuff.
With air.
Yes, I understand. let me tell you. We have at my job, because I work in the tire industry, we have this thing called a cheetah. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And it's an air tank that you can pump up to about 180 PSI. And it has a 2-inch pipe coming out of it with a ball valve. So you just open the valve and it empties the reservoir of that tank instantly. Now, one thing I've found is that, and it's the pipe that's on it is pinched shut down at the end, so it's elongated like a vacuum cleaner attachment. And that's to help seat tires on the rim when they're really wide. Couldn't you know, they use standard pipe thread on that damn thing, and you can thread a 10-foot of galvanized steel pipe on there. And so we were launching projectiles out of this thing. Now, a few things I did learn is that if you're using a potato, anything over 80 PSI tends to turn them into friggin' hash browns before they ever get out the end of the barrel. However,
this is thinking out of the box, Linda.
I know. I'm loving
however,
it.
However, if you was to put a thing of
I'm
marbles in
notes.
There.
Well, now,
I'm
let me tell
notes.
You. If you take a crankshaft pulley bolt, okay,
mm-hmm.
and wrap it in a shop rag, a good cotton shop rag, and tie it in a nice stiff knot, and you ram it down the barrel so tight that you know, it takes two guys with everything they've got to cram it down there, it actually breaks the sound barrier as it comes out of the end of the barrel, and it sounds like a damn 12-gauge going off.
That's funny. Oh, my God.
and it'll go straight through a car. By the way.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my
I mean,
Lord.
Both doors and out the other side. you know, this all started harmlessly enough with some rubber bands tied together between the rails for the shop door, and we were launching wheel weights with rubber bands about 500 yards. And every once in a while, you know, you don't hold it just right, and it gets hung up on the rubber band, and it launches it back at you. Which is never a good thing. It can leave painful spots on your arms and knuckles. But, you know, boys will be boys.
This is proof that men never grow up. Oh, my
God.
But this is the ingenuity I talk about that makes it ain't just our guns that you got to worry about. We're going to fight. We're going to fight all out.
Yeah.
If you're counting on just being a gunfight, you're fools.
You know that. Okay, and you talk about a gunfight. Does everyone here understand the number one rule to a gunfight? The number one rule in a gunfight, bring a gun.
Shoot. Don't ever.
Number two, win.
That's it. Amen.
My pops told me something years ago, and it stuck with me forever. There is no such thing as a fair fight.
No. That's why it's called a fight.
Yep. You're in it to win it, baby.
That's true. There's no such thing as a fair fight.
Robert, everybody here, you guys got to come in to Delaney. We're going to party. I'm going to go check out my travel agent to get the best deal probably next week and get it done. I'm excited. So, you guys, thank you.
Ron, are you driving up there?
I am.
Oh, yay.
I say I am. Don't get excited. Providing that I can get the time off, which I'm pretty sure that I can.
Oh, please.
As long as we can get everything coordinated, of course I would drive because it's really not that far. Sorry about that. It was really loud. Two beer bottles and an empty trash can make a lot of noise. Especially when it's a 24-ounce bottle.
Oy.
But it's a porter, so it's really good.
Good thing you're not in New York. Old Bloom Turd, Hair Bloom Turd, would have your butt.
Oh, God. He's crazy. He's what you
call
a fascist. Roman.
That guy's Mussolini on steroids. Oh, my God.
New York is beautiful.
He's really crazy.
New York City, you know? I mean, you could just shove that off into the Atlantic and think anybody admit
it. I've often thought that. Part of the Northeast into the ocean, California up into the ocean.
Absolutely.
Sorry, Linda, get
Let
out
me
there.
Get out of here first. I know.
By
the
way, on the
guys.
Other side of the border.
Yeah, well.
You just hope to pray I don't get the hurricanes.
God bless, guys.
Guys, love you guys. We'll see you soon. Hopefully, whatever time
God
we're going to be
everyone.
On back on the air. Love you guys. Take care.
Love
we'll see
you
on the air again. Good night.
Give my love to you, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks, Robert. I'm going to try to sign out. Okay.